G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 153. And just before I get started today, I just wanted to give a big shout out to all the members of the Fasting Highway Facebook community. If you're looking to get started with intermittent fasting or find some more information out about it and get some ongoing support, well, come and join us in the Fasting Highway Facebook community. Also, I just wanted to give a big shout out to those that have been buying my book, The Fasting Highway, this year. Much appreciated. I really appreciate all the feedback, so thank you. You can get that on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. Okay, let's get on to today's exciting guest. And I'm going to be speaking with the amazing Daryl Woods. And Daryl lives in Manitoba in Canada, where at time of interview was a chilly minus 34 with a wind chill factor. And Daryl's had some trials and tribulations with his life, and his weight ballooned up to a massive 375 pounds. And Daryl has now taken his life back. After the birth of his son some years ago, he decided he wanted to be a role model, and certainly a role model he is. And here to tell his exciting story today is Daryl Woods. Oh, g'day, Daryl, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me.
Hey, Graham. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here, Daryl, and you're a very inspiring member of the Fasting Highway Facebook community. But Daryl, for people around the world that may not know you or your story, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a bit of that, your backstory, sort of where you come from with your health and weight and that sort of thing in your life, and how you found your way to intermittent fasting.
Okay, well, I'm old. I'm 51 now. Always struggled with my weight since being a teenager, I guess, or adolescence, or however you want to put it, 12, 13 years old. I was always, you know, 25, 30 pounds overweight or whatever. My first real diet was probably at age 12. And the weight wasn't a terrible issue up until leaving high school. Then I got a job at a fast food joint. And I guess high school, I probably left at about 220 pounds, but I played hockey in that. So I was fairly active and my weight wasn't a real big issue for me. Getting out of school and going into the workforce, working in a fast food restaurant wasn't a real great place for me to be. So I probably went up to 250-ish for 3 or 4 years. I drank way too much pop back then, and my doctor had advised me that my sugar levels were getting dangerously high, that I'd have to, you know, make some changes or I'd end up having to be on diabetes medicine. So I switched to Diet Coke thinking, oh, well, that's perfect, right? Not knowing, you know, the horrors of aspartame or, you know, what I know now. But anyways, that's what I did and started drinking Diet Coke. And the weight just kind of crept up and 250, 260 kind of thing. Then I made a change in my life at, I think it was 24 or 25, I became a long haul truck driver. And I'd run Winnipeg to Toronto to Vancouver with a partner. So the truck never stopped for 4.5 days on the road, other than getting fuel. That was the only time we'd stop and use the washroom or whatever at that time. So my weight with that job went up to 3, 3 1/4 kind of thing, you know, just gradually going up because being completely sedentary and having a trucker's diet, right? Like it wasn't real spiffy. Yeah, like, always lived here in Manitoba and deal with our cold weather, and had a kid in 2001. My weight before I had Mitch with my ex-wife, I was down to, like, I struggled with weight, like I said, and I'd go on diets. And around that time, the early 2000s, Atkins was getting a lot of press, so I read some books on that, and I got down to probably 225-ish when my son was born in 2008, but that quickly rebounded after having him and the stress of being away from home trucking and a newborn at home, and, you know, lots of excuses, I guess. Always kind of had that poor self-esteem with the weight issues, like most of us have, right? You know, the self-loathing and all that good stuff that we all kind of deal with and battle with our thoughts, right? Like it's a mind game, this weight loss journey or lifestyle now, is what I've learned since the last few years. I've really discovered the mental health aspect of it, along with, well, I started with the dirty fasting, I guess. I didn't know what it was called at the time. And now, in the last 9 months or so, I've discovered this wonderful community of clean fasting. And that completely changed things for me. It probably, like, I probably only lost another 25 pounds with the clean fasting, kind of accidentally, really, because all I did was quit drinking cream in my coffee, but my lifestyle's still the same. I've become very active, and the more weight that comes off, the easier it is. When I was, I'm not sure exactly how heavy I was. Last time I was on a scale, I was 370 pounds, and I was disgusted and couldn't look at a scale again. So I think it was 2018 at Christmas time. That's what I weighed, that 370. I saw that. So I figured, well, I'll eat like a horse here, and then come the new year, I'll, you know, start dialing it in on not eating the typical junk food. Like, I'm Irish descent, so potatoes and starches are a big friend of mine, or enemy, I guess. So I cut them out and didn't eat the breakfast or anything. I just have lunch and dinner, or supper, however you call it. I had fairly good success. I think that first year I probably lost 100 pounds just eating the two meals a day. As I got lighter, once I got down to around the 300 pound mark, I was able to start walking and stuff again, like exercising my dogs and that. Like, not that I couldn't walk. I came off the highway and I started working for the government here as a snowplow driver, maintenance worker. It's not like I couldn't walk. It's just I was so obese, I was tired all the time. But when I got down to 300 pounds, I was able to start walking my dogs slowly and short distances at first. Didn't miss many days doing from 2019 on. I worked my way up to about 5 miles a day with my walking in our goofy weather up here. And like I was saying before we started the interview here, it's minus 18 here in beautiful Stephenfield, Manitoba right now. And with the wind chill, I think the girl on the news here at supper time said it was minus 34 right now. So it's enjoyable, and you burn some calories trying to stay warm when you're out walking your dogs in this weather.
Yeah, for sure. Man, that's an amazing backstory. And talk about a start in life, like, to gain weight. Like, you've left school. You're a pretty beefy guy when you left school. And then you went into a fast food job, and then you went into a truck driving job. Talk about a couple of double whammies there with jobs that are notoriously known as, you know, quite unhealthy for some people. And, you know, particularly truck drivers on the road, you know, you're having that lifestyle of going into those roadhouses and just eating on the run and that sort of thing, and maybe not always having the best sort of food, and then just sitting in the truck and gaining that weight and getting up to that sort of 370 mark, mate, which for Australian listeners down here, that's about 165 sort of kilo mark you were looking at. And then you sort of got down to that sort of 325, and you looked at that Atkins, and you've done quite a range of different diets and that sort of thing in your life, I guess. But let's talk about your protocol when you come. And you mentioned that dirty fasting. I want to talk to you about that in a minute. But when you first sort of came to IF with that two meals a day, was that your protocol that you stuck with right through that sort of weight loss where you got that 100 pounds off?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, just wouldn't eat anything until my lunch break at work. And then when I'd get home from work, I'd have supper. Well, I'd take my dogs for a walk, then I'd have supper, and that was it. Like, I'm pretty regimented. Like, the mental health aspect of it, I've done a lot of work and counseling and that. And once I get into a routine, I stick with it. Like, I'm a little bit obsessive that way, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, been two meals a day, you know, for going on 4 years now, I guess.
Yeah. So you're a guy that's pretty laser focused on what you do, and it's just your protocol. So when you first started, Gerald, were you eating all the things, or were you sort of delaying anything in food or alcohol?
Alcohol, I didn't stop until probably a year and a half into it. Because I found when I'd have a drink or two, then, you know, the urge is to have something, right? Like the inhibition's gone. So then the snacking would come in. I can't eat potatoes or bread. I'm like an addict. I know that if I have it, it's just like when I was a 2-pack-a-day smoker. I know if I had one cigarette now, I'd be right back to it. So I know if I had, like, I could eat a pot of mashed potatoes and just, okay, where's more, right? Like, that's just how I am. So though that and bread are two things I avoid. But other than that, like, for my birthday, my mom, you know, great woman, 87 years old, dealing with a broken leg right now, but I love her very much. And she made me a carrot cake. That's my favorite thing. So on my birthday, I'll have a piece of my carrot cake or whatever, you know, like, other than that. But being an old fashioned farm wife, she has to have potatoes on the table, and that's fine. I just don't have it. And she knows not to. You know, they understand, they've seen my struggles with it, and they know that this is how Daryl eats now. And look at how, you know, successful I've been at finally getting my weight under control. So I've got a couple of very supportive elderly parents, but very thankful for that and their understanding to it.
Yeah. Big shout out to your mum, and I hope the broken leg gets better, and all my best wishes to you coming here from Australia. But Daryl, when you sort of said that you were started and you were eating all the things and that sort of stuff, have you noticed that you've gravitated to a high quality food over the last 4 years, or have you sort of been constant with what you've been eating?
I'm fairly consistent with what I eat. I'll splurge once in a while and have like a steak or beef or whatever, but the price is really high the last few years. It's outrageous. So I eat for protein, I eat mostly lean chicken breasts, like skinless chicken breasts, and I eat a fair bit of venison. I live on an acreage, and we have a fairly good deer population, so when the hunting season comes along, I try to harvest enough, and my son that I get to have every other week, he enjoys his deer tacos, so we eat a fair bit of venison too.
Yeah, sounds a great lifestyle, mate. So, and what happened sort of last 4 years, Daryl? You mentioned there when you were heavy, you didn't want to exercise, right? And I could really relate with that, because when you're obese, the last thing you want to do is go out for a walk. And I really loved that how you said you got down to that 300 sort of mark, and then you sort of felt like you could exercise, and you started walking, And has exercise become something, when the weather permits, that you really love now?
Oh yeah, I'm completely addicted to it. I did 1500 miles, not last year, the year before. I don't miss many days, even with our, you know, minus 40 and that kind of good stuff. I go out for at least a mile or two with my dogs. They'll drive me nuts if I don't take them for a walk. They're a bit obsessive too. So I exercise every day. I haven't missed many days.
Yeah, I can relate to that too, mate. It does become addictive, doesn't it? Because you feel so great and you actually enjoy doing it. And, you know, I know when last year I did a hike here in Western Australia, 5-day hike, 132 kilometers, very tough terrain.
Oh, wow.
You know, we went over a course that the special forces here use for their training. So you can imagine how tough it was. And never in a million years would I even considered doing that when I was obese. And I was able to do that. And it was so freeing knowing that you now can do anything. Like, you can walk anywhere. And obviously 4 years now. And just talk about us through that, Darryl. I mean, I'm going to go back to your high weight there of 370 or sort of 165 kilos. And where are you today, right now, with your weight?
I don't weigh that much anymore. I weighed 2 weeks ago, and I was 185 pounds.
Far out. So you basically cut yourself in half.
Yeah, I'm half the man I used to be, I guess, yeah.
Well, you're still probably the same man you used to be, but you're just 185 pounds lighter, and that's exactly half of what your high weight was there. There's sort of so many life-changing things must have happened to you, Darryl. So let's just talk about some of them for a minute. What we call the non-scale victories, the health benefits. There must have been a ton of those that have come for you.
Oh, absolutely. Like, now I run, I cycle. I'm going to start doing short triathlons next year. I've gotten hooked on the endurance aspect of exercise, like the running and the cycling. One thing I've discovered with, I've done some longer fasts too, you know, like 48, 60 hours in that. And it's the most amazing thing when you go, like I did a 50 kilometer bike ride at the tail end of a 60 hour fast. And it was like, not to be religious, I'm not, but it was like a spiritual experience, like just the complete joy of riding my bike at whatever 35 mile an hour or whatever on the highway as the sun's coming up, and just being aware of everything. Like, I was just alive. It just, that aspect of the weight loss and doing it in a fasted state, I guess, is it changed me. It changed my mind. Now I'm chasing that feeling, because it's so, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I just feel so alive now. And like, trying to show this to my son, because like, that's what the motivation for losing the weight was, like being a 370 pound bum sitting on the couch, you know, what's, you know, that's no way for a 8-year-old kid to be watching his dad live his life, you know, woofing down a bag of chips every night and couple of shots of vodka and, you know, in bed at 7 o'clock, and it wasn't a good way to be. So no, it's like the non-scale victory is I found myself, I guess, that I haven't seen since I was probably 12. I found that joy in life again, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic, mate. You know, your son was your why, I guess. And you know, I really congratulate you doing that. Not only for yourself, but for your son as well, because, you know, being an obese parent at school is hard because your kids get ragged about it and that sort of thing. And it's difficult because you avoid all the fun things that kids do with parents at school, social days, the running races, the swimming races, the teacher-parent races, all of that. And I avoided that right through my two girls' school life. And I really regret that. And I regret doing that to my girls. And so I congratulate you. And I say to anybody out there that's got kids, you know, you've got to do this for yourself, but it's a pretty good why, and it's a pretty good thing to do as a role model and show your child just what it is to be healthy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did it for myself, but I wanted to show Mitch, my son, that as long as you set your mind to it and give your best effort or maximum effort is kind of what I use as a saying. As long as you do that, you're going to get ahead. Like, it's going to work out for you. Yeah, there's going to be hard times, but you're going to get through it, and you're going to do what you set out to do, because it's all about the power of your mind.
It is, mate. And we're going to talk about that. But, you know, you're a 51-year-old man. You're still a young guy. You've got a lot of living to do yet. And by doing this and getting that sort of half the body weight off you, 370 to 185, you've not only changed your life, but you've likely extended your life by some time. And that's how I feel. I mean, losing the amount of weight that I did and keeping that weight off. And for me, that's been the big thing about getting the weight off. And when I got the weight off, did you get to the point where you lost a lot of weight and then you thought, man, how am I going to keep this weight off for life? You know, like, that's because every other diet, you'd lose weight, you'd put it back on. But with intermittent fasting, I was pretty confident. How did you feel when you got to the stage where you felt comfortable where you are now?
Well, it's nice to know that, you know, you can have your up days or whatever you want to call it, like when, like Christmas or whatever, I'll eat a little bit more than I normally will, but I know all I have to do is pull that back out of my toolbox the next day, and I'm right back into the rhythm of things, right? Like, you know, same thing if I want to have a drink with a friend, you know, over the holidays or whatever. I know I can have that glass of vodka or whatever, and, you know, the next day I don't need to even think about it because I'm back into my protocol. Like, my window is whatever, like 5 till 7 o'clock at night is when I eat generally. I'd like to change that a bit. I'd like to try earlier in the day, but just with work and circumstances and having to make food for my kid, the supper hour, like that 5 to 7 time frame, works well for me right now. But I'm wondering if I moved it to say like a lunchtime at noon, and then if I was going into bed in a fasted state, if it would increase. But I like doing the training I do too, like the endurance training that I do, I start to wonder if I'm going to need to increase my carbs at some point too, right? Like, just because, like, doing triathlon, like, it's just short ones that I'm going to start with. They're called sprints. I think it's a 5K run and a 20 or a 40K bike ride and a 750-meter swim. And I'm just wondering if I'm going to have enough glycogen or whatever the word is in reserves, you know, because I probably only eat about 2,500 calories a day in that two-hour window, my one meal or whatever, my feeding frame or whatever I'm at now. Like, I don't know. It's all a learning experience. And that's what's so fun about this, is learning how your body reacts to it and, you know, how you can tweak it or, you know, add this or add that. Or
yeah, it's an experimental one, Daryl, for sure. And it's got to be flexible to be sustainable for life, intermittent fasting. That's the thing. And you've got to be able to move things around sometimes to fit life. Like, just a couple of days ago, I caught up with a couple of buddies I haven't seen for a while and thought, okay, we'll have a couple of drinks, and was out of my comfort zone, really, because I haven't been doing that for a while. And then I was staying in a hotel room that had all these snacks there, you know, like chips and all that. Like you said before, you had a few drinks and then all of a sudden you start thinking, oh, man, I'm hungry, and then you want the snack.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, I'm getting rid of them. So all I did was open the door and I put them out in the hallway. It was in a box. And I put the box out in the hallway and I shut the door. But I thought, well, hopefully someone walking past might pick them up and take them and have them, you know, and it's all okay, but I don't want them. And I just removed that. So it was about making food scarce. And that's what we do with intermittent fasting. I mean, I feel intermittent fasting is going that full circle, Daryl, like going back to what our ancestors did and making food scarce. And so food wasn't as available. I mean, you know this more than anybody. You worked in a fast food store, so you know how available food is. And you know how available food is on life on the road. And I remember I interviewed another trucker, a guy called Jeff Barth, way back, probably episode 6, 7, something like that. And Jeff was a trucker who put on a lot of weight too, and he had some good success with intermittent fasting. We're about to follow Jeff up as well. But yeah, I guess for people that live their life on the road, it can be tricky. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, mate, losing all this weight, 187 pounds, and I know people want to know this, is, was loose skin an issue for you?
A little bit. I've got some on my lower abdomen, and my upper thighs are a little bit. But other than that, you know, considering like you watch those oddity shows, or you know, like Biggest Loser or whatever, and those people lose it in 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever it is, and they've got like, you know, like folds. I don't have that. I've got wrinkly skin, and it's improving. You know, like you'd think with losing half my body weight, I'd have a lot more, but it's fairly good. Like you can see my abs, you know, like there's not so much loose skin that, you know, it's hiding all the hard work I put into, you know, into my body.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? The abs. I mean, I was looking in the mirror one day when I was having a shower. I thought, holy cow, I got abs. I couldn't believe it. Graham Curry's got abs. I never knew I had abs. But I found longer I've been going with this, Daryl, my body seems to tighten up. And I've been quite lucky not having a lot of loose skin, losing 132 pounds or 60 kilos. I'd like you, a bit of wrinkle on my arms, that sort of thing, top of my thighs. But hey, you know what? I'll take that over being obese any day of the week.
Absolutely. You can move. You're free. You have your life back, right? Like it's like one little thing, like working for the highways department here in Manitoba, like you got to fix roadside signs or whatever. And when I was at my fattest, you'd get out of the truck to go stand up a sign. And I remember getting back into the half ton and I thought I was going to die because I couldn't catch my breath. And that was just from walking, you know, 30 feet down into the bottom of a ditch and then back up. And, you know, I was so poorly out of shape that I couldn't catch my breath. And I thought, I'm going to have a freaking heart attack here on the side of the road because I'm so, like, I have let myself go, like, just disgusted with myself, right?
Yeah. But everything's a challenge, isn't it, when you're that weight? I mean, everything's a challenge. Just walking down the street to the mailbox or just, like, getting out of the truck, like you said, and just getting up off the floor. I always found like if I was on the floor, it was so hard getting up. And now I can get down on the floor. I can get up easily. I can just jump up. And it's so freeing. And those things you sort of don't really notice, but, you know, but they catch you. Like you, sometimes they just catch you. It's like when you walk past a shop window and you look in the reflection, you go, holy moly, is that me? Did you ever have that experience where you looked at your reflection?
Absolutely. It's like, wow, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's like you know, most of the time I still think I'm the fat guy I had been for, you know, 30 years or whatever it was, you know, bigger. Then I look at myself and it's like, holy cow, I'm small. You know, like when you do catch that glimpse, you know, walking by a storefront window or something, it's just like, yeah, wow, that's, you kind of forget, right? Like being the size I am, like I'm whatever, down to about 6'1" now, but I've always been a bigger guy, but now I'm not that presence, you know, like I'd walk into a store or something and people would get out of your way. Well, yeah, because you took up the entire aisle, right? Now I'm just like any other, you know, 6-foot-tall guy or 6'1", you know, just I'm average and it feels pretty good.
Yeah, loving this, mate. I could resonate with everything you're saying. It's like you walk into a shop now or a clothing shop or something and you're not invisible anymore. I remember going into shops when I was as big as I was and it was like you weren't even there. They didn't want to know because you were a headache to say you that there was not many clothes in there that were going to fit you. But now you walk in there and they know you're not a headache. So they look at you totally differently. And I always found, and it's sad, this is sad, mate, that when I was an obese guy, I was getting treated so differently to how I am now. Like I walk into places, hello, sir, how are you? How's things? I'll go into a plane, big smile. How are you going? Everyone sit down next to somebody. Hey, how are you going? Shake your hand. Whereas when I was obese, it was like, oh my God, this guy's going to sit next to me. No way. And it's just a totally different ball game now. It's just great, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have that pride in yourself and you don't have that, you know, what are they thinking about me running in the back of your head? You know, it's at least for me, I always had so much self-doubt and that loathing. And now with, you know, look what I've done. I'm fairly fat. There's of 51-year-old guys that can do what I do. Like, you know, I'll run 10K, I'll bike 50K. Like, there's not a lot of dads, or, you know, they say dad bods or whatever. Well, I was dad bod times two, and now I'm not a dad bod. Like, I've gotten myself into shape. I kind of think of myself as an athlete now because of the training I do. Like, it's completely changed my life, and it's because of that eating regimen, like the time restricted eating and the clean fasting is like upped it a notch. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. So when I used to drive to work, you go past the park, you'd see all these people exercising, or you'd hear about people going on these big hikes and all that. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. You know, must be neat to be able to do that. And I just thought, well, I don't do that because I'm obese, and, you know, that's me. But now I'm one of those people. I'm out there hiking, I'm at the park, you know, and it's just so great to be able to fit in like that. And I say to any guy out there or any woman that's sitting there listening that's obese, you don't have to be. There is an answer. You just need to apply yourself. And look, not everybody can do intermittent fasting because it's tough. It's mentally challenging. I mean, the actual concept, Daryl, is quite simple, isn't it? I mean, you're fasting in a pattern of time, you're eating in a pattern of time, but it's that mental aspect is the challenge. And let's talk about that now. And I know you mentioned it to me before, but the mental side of this is the big challenge, isn't it?
Oh, completely. Yeah, those voices in your head, and you've got to make that conscious decision for whatever it is. You know, like, no, I'm not going to eat that because I know I'm already at my limit. Like, I still use an app on my phone for my timing, like my eating window or whatever. I like that. I use that religiously, just because it's simple for my simple little mind. But yeah, I wanted to go back to, like, when you were talking about the non-scale things and that. Do you remember when you were big and you'd drop something, say a dollar, and you'd look and you'd make the decision, is it really worth bending over the effort to pick that up, or should I just leave it? Same with tying your shoes. Like, you were so fat, or I was anyways, I was so fat, I'd lose my breath just tying my shoes or dropping that dollar bill. Like, you know, is it really worth it to bend over and do that? And now, like you said, getting up off the floor or whatever is easy. But when you're big or obese, you make the decision, yeah, it's not really worth it to tie my shoes up or to even pick that, you know, there's a dollar on the ground. Yeah, it's only a dollar. It's not worth my time to do that.
Yeah, been there, done that, mate. Not so much picking up dollars, but just shoelaces undone. I'd have to get my girls to do them up for me. You know, I'd sit down on a park bench. I'd really struggle to try and do my shoelaces up. So I even got to the stage where I'd wear shoes that didn't have any shoelaces in them when I was obese. You know, because I was worried that they were going to get undone and I wasn't going to be able to get them back together, you know. So, but there's so many worrying things, isn't there? There's like going to the movies. Am I going to break the chair? Going to a restaurant. Am I going to break the chair? Am I going to fit into the airline seats? All those worries you have as a very obese person that just go. I mean, you're now a guy that can just go anywhere. You'll be able to go on any aircraft in the world. And I'll tell you the most freeing experience I've had in this whole thing, mate, was sitting down on the plane and doing a seatbelt up and seeing 8 inches of the belt hanging out. And I was just like, wow, I have now arrived in what I term just the same as everybody else. I don't want to be any better or any, you know, whatever than anyone else. I just want to be the same. I just want to have the same opportunities and just enjoy life the same. And I think by doing intermittent fasting has really allowed me to do that.
It gave you your life back. And those airline seatbelts, my God, they used to cause so much anxiety. I didn't fly a lot, but, you know, I flew enough that, oh my God, is it going to fit? You know, you got to wedge your ass in there between the arms of the thing to begin with. And then can you even get the damn seatbelt to do up? Or, you know, like the anxiety it causes just from being that big. I don't think a lot of people, unless they have a weight issue, realize what we go through or have gone through. Like, we're out the other side, and hopefully we can maintain this lifestyle the rest of our lives and be healthy and fit and everything. But the mental struggle of it, like being worrying about what other people are thinking, and I know that's not healthy to worry about that, but when you're that big, people are looking at you, and you, it's just a matter of fact.
It is, mate. I mean, you stand out. I mean, you're a tall guy. I mean, you're a 6'1" guy. You're 370, man. You're a big unit, you know. Like, you'd come around the corner, you'd freak people out, just like I used to. And now we don't. When you see obese people, you just want to help them.
I do, because, like, even I've got coworkers that, you know, struggle with their blood sugar and everything else. And I know from reading the books like Dr. Fung's Diabetes Code and that, and I believe it's New Zealand that's actually prescribing intermittent fasting now for type 2 diabetes. Like, do some research, people. Like, you know, like, but I don't want to, you know, you don't, it's, I'm not to the point where, you know, they tease me, oh, Daryl's, you know, on a hunger strike or whatever, my coworkers or that. But I don't want to, I want to help them, but I don't want to be that guy that, you know, the know-it-all guy either. You know, if they'd approach me and say, explain to me, Daryl, what you've done, I'd more than, you know, happily, you know, put a lot of time into telling them how to, I just got to throw some wood on the fire here. I'd more than happily explain it to them, or, you know, coach them, or however you want to put it, not coach, but, you know, tell them my experiences or whatever, right? And but to be forward enough with coworkers anyways, I won't do it. With friends, I've got some friends that struggle with their weight, and, you know, they're just not in the headspace they need to be yet for that, but they know they can get a hold of Daryl at any time, and I'll give them my insights, that what's worked for me or what I've read, or like I listen to books. I don't read books very much. I haven't read yours because I don't physically read. I like audio. I wish you were on an audiobook, because I'd listen to it in a heartbeat. Right. That's why I like the podcast, because I get the information that way as opposed to reading.
Yeah, well, here's the good news, mate. The audiobook is coming. It's been a long time coming. It's
right on.
Yeah, well, because I'm an Australian author, we don't have access to Audible via what's called ACX, Authors Creative Exchange, which is owned by the Zon, and they control things, but you can only be in the UK or America to be able to load directly through to Audible. So you've got to go through a back-end sort of platform. So that's what we've been doing. But I recorded the book some time ago. So it will be available, and I'll let people know here on the podcast, and that probably, hopefully, will be by the end of the year. So stay tuned for that. But, Daryl, let's get back now to, I want to ask you a question about, you know, your life as a truck driver. Obviously, that set you up as a schedule guy. You mentioned that you're very regimented about times. You have an app and all that sort of thing. And I think a lot of that's probably come from your jobs that you've been doing, you know, truck driving, you have to be in a certain place at a certain time and all that. And so you're a creature of habit. And you mentioned those longer fasts that you did. What was the reason that you did them, Daryl? Was it more you're looking for the autophagy side of things, or what were you looking for there?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly, I guess that's how you say that word. I've heard it a few different ways. But yeah, that's completely it. Like, I listen, I consume a lot of podcasts, a lot of fasting podcasts. And I forget what guy or guys had been talking about the longer fasts. So I thought, well, why not try that? You know, like it's just a challenge to me, right? Like, and I wasn't hungry at all doing those longer fasts. So, and quite honestly, I've done three like that length in the last 3 months, and I'm kind of doing it once a month just as a reset for my body, you know, just, you know, get that 60. The 72 I haven't gone to, like, just under, but that's just a scheduling thing. But the autophagy, I can't say the word, I'm sorry, Graham, that the regeneration in that, because dementia runs in my family. My dad's getting a bit forgetful at 89, and his mother was too. And from what I've listened to, apparently that cell regeneration, that autophagy thing, helps with the dementia, gets rid of the plaque or whatever in your brain, or helps get rid of those damaged cells. So that's really interesting to me, because I'm already at 51 getting a little forgetful. So if, you know, anything I can do to improve it, why not try it? And
yeah,
it was exactly just,
right.
It was a side benefit that, you know, even a 24-hour fast, exercising in it is, it, you're so in the zone, like your mind is right there, like you're enjoying absolutely everything. Like I live in the country, I live on a little lake here, and I run on back roads. They're all gravel roads. It's just, you're seeing the deer and the coyotes, and just your mind is so clear when you're that in that fasted state. Colors are brighter. Like it's life-changing. It's just life-changing. And the autophagy or whatever, you know, those benefits, I hope they're real. Like I hope it's helping, you know, get rid of the bad cells in your brain that lead to dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. But, you know, the exercising aspect during the fast is phenomenal. Like I exercise every day for a couple hours a day, whether it's running or cycling or, you know, weightlifting. Like that's part of my routine now.
Yeah.
I get up 2 hours before I have to go to work just to get my bike ride and yoga and meditating and that done before work. So I'm not worrying about, oh, well, I'm going to get home from work late and, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So like, this week I'm on early mornings. I got to do the road report. So I'm supposed to start at 5. So I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, get on my exercise bike and listen to an audio book or a podcast and do my hour and a half workout. And then I leave for work at 4 to get there for 5. Right. But I do like the routine. Sorry, I'm a bit long winded, but as far as scheduling and that, like I just scheduled that into my life, that making me a priority, my fitness, my health, a priority.
And that's awesome, mate. That's really awesome, because, you know, making your health a priority is so great. And just when people say to me, oh, I don't have time for this, I don't have time to do all this exercise, hey, do what Daryl does. Get out of bed an hour earlier or an hour and a half earlier before you go to work. I mean, how many people jump out of bed, they jump in the shower, they jump in the car, they drive to work? And I did a thing called the 5 a.m. Club, right? There's a book by Rohan Sharma. And it was a 66-day challenge where you had to get up at 5 a.m. every day. And so, you know, I'd set my alarm for 10 to 5, and it was 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boom, jump out of bed. And, you know, I'd go out, I'd do some, you know, whatever I had to do on the computer and catch up with things. And I'd do some exercise and go for a walk. In the summer, I'd go down to the local pool and have a swim, all before work. And I got so much more achieved. And actually, when I was writing my book, The Fasting Highway, was when I was doing that. So I was able to do that as well and work on that every day. And so I just got all these things achieved that I'd never done before. And it was so great for my health. And I felt so alive. You know, the flip side was I was going to bed a little bit earlier at night, maybe around 9 o'clock, 9:30, something like that. But still, I was getting a really restful sleep. And I think that you can make time for our health, Daryl, and that's the important thing. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is, man, cutting yourself in half, clothing must have been wild for you. What did you do, A, with all your clothes as you were going down? And how do you love going clothes shopping now?
Well, I've got some friends that are a friend that's a bigger guy. So he's he seems to be going up in weight lately, so I just give him my fat clothes, and he's quite appreciative because being a bigger guy, he didn't like having to shop for stuff either, right? None of us do when we're big, so they've been recycled that way. My buddy gets them. But yeah, no, it's amazing. Like, I wear a medium shirt now, and I wear like a 31-inch jean. Like, it's unreal.
Wow.
I couldn't wear jeans for the longest time. You know, I'd go to the Walmart and I'd get the 5X sweatpants and, you know, that. But, yeah, no.
What was your waist size at your highest, do you think?
I remember having a pair of jeans that were 56 relaxed fit and they wouldn't fit.
Far out. You're 31 now. So you lost 25 inches off your waist.
Yeah, if pant sizes are actual, I've read some stuff that's vanity sizing for men too. I guess it's not just the women that have that. Someone had said that, you know, if you're in a 36 jean, actually put a tape measure on it and it'll be different, eh? But anyways, yeah, the tag on my Levi's say 31, so I'm proud of it.
One of the biggest things, mate, for me was learning to love myself first and saying that I'm okay and I'm good. And every day waking up and having that positive self-affirmation, do you find that when you talk to yourself more positively, things happen?
Absolutely. And like back to the 5 a.m. club, I've read that book and I did that too. And that morning affirmation, when I wake up, I generally wake up a few minutes before my alarm. I've got that internal clock in my head. And the first thing I think of, it's going to be a good day. And the old Daryl, it was never like that. It was, you know, I'd mother F myself and, you know, mad at myself, that self-loathing. But now it's all about positive thoughts and, you know, there's the affirmations and that and part of my meditation and that. You do that and, you know, old Daryl would have said it's a bunch of hokey, but it's changed my life, you know. The health lifestyle that I'm in and the mindfulness and meditation and everything, like it's a completely, I wish I would have discovered this 30 years ago, but I suppose I had to learn everything that I did to get to where I am, right? So
yeah, look, the past is the past. Put it in the forgettery, mate, and we're moving into the future now. That's the thing. I mean, you know, I always sort of look back at it and I regret, you know, I mean, I'm a guy that's traveled the world, you know, I've been around the world, even when I was an obese guy, I've had a lot of really fantastic experiences. Some of them have been limited by my weight. I remember I was in the Grand Canyon and I tried to get on a helicopter and I was standing at the counter and the lady's looking at the scale. There was a scale there you had to stand on. And she said, I'm really sorry, sir, but you're over the weight limit for our helicopter. And I never got to do that experience. So I'm looking forward to going back to the States and being able to do that. And I mean, you live in one of the most beautiful countries in the world, which I'm really hanging out to go and see, in Manitoba there. And a big shout out to your fellow Manitobian there and Greg Curry, also Keith McDonald over there. And there's many other Canadians, of course, in the Fasting Highway Facebook group. But you know, when you have that environment that's beautiful, you can actually enjoy it. And now that you've got to let weight off, Daryl, like you mentioned, going down those roads, seeing the coyotes as you're walking along or running or cycling, how fantastic is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just being free, you know, being what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be out there experiencing this world, right? Like, I can go and do it. I, you know, drive for an hour and a half and I'm in the white shell, like Rick, where I am here in South Central Manitoba, it's the plains, but I drive 2 hours to the east, I'm in the boreal forest and it's all rock and just beautiful and, you know, clear rock lakes and just, you know, it's a wonderful place. And there's so many great hiking trails out there. There's more that I'm going to do, but I've done some out there. Like it's unlimited. The things you can go and see and get off the beaten path and do these hiking trails and not have to worry about, oh, can I do that? Or like zip lining. I took my son zip lining here in the Pembina Escarpment and it was a wonderful experience, you know, and yeah. I know 4 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that because, well, one, I wouldn't have been able to walk up the hill like it's in a valley, right? Like that would have killed me. But, you know, being able to fit in and, you know, put the harness on and away you go and, you know, be normal sized and just be a normal person and experiencing those things. It was so much fun.
The big question before we talk about the future is what has been the difference, Daryl? I mean, you were doing that for quite some time and then you switched to that clean fast. Just tell me the difference. Was the fasting easier or what happened?
Oh, absolutely. There's no way I'd be able to do the longer fasts if I was still doing the cream. Like by the time lunchtime would come around when I was having the cream or the flavored cream in my coffee, you know, noon couldn't get here fast enough. I was ravenous by that point, you know, and, you know, lunch would get inhaled. And now, you know, I enjoy my food. I get home. I break my fast with the same thing every day, a cup of oatmeal, scoop of protein powder, some quinoa, and a few mixed berries in it. And, you know, enjoy that. And then I'll have my chicken and broccoli and cauliflower or whatever, you know, or whether it's a salad with it or, you know, my protein, like meat protein that way. But it's mindful eating, like, because when I can be a glutton, I guess, like just shovel it down and don't even taste the food like the old Daryl was, but now, you know, I eat it and I enjoy it and, you know, it's nourishing my body. Whereas before it was a means to the ends, right? It was filling that hole in my body, I guess.
Yeah. You know, mate, it's like listening to myself. It really is. It's your story is resonates with me so much, particularly around when we were obese, eating that food. It was just volume. I never tasted food. It was just volume. I was just eating it. It's like you're saying, sitting on the couch, mindlessly eating bags of chips. You weren't tasting the chips. You were just eating the volume because you felt like that feeling of being full and stuffed when you're obese. Yep. And you had that low self-esteem and that sort of thing. And I think that's the big change for me is when I started discovering how great food tastes and great food tastes great. And I always say to people on this journey, look, I'm not here to tell anybody what to eat or what to do, but I like to eat what makes me feel my greatest and what's going to help my body run at its optimum. I don't want to eat what my mind wants because my mind got me to 360 pounds. That was the problem. So when you hear people say you can eat whatever you want with intermittent fasting, well, stop and think about that for a minute. And I broke that myth down with Jim Stevens in two episodes of this podcast, in episode 8 and also 106, where Jim talked about that. And I say to people, eat what makes you feel your greatest and everything will work out. Because I think you've got to identify your trigger foods first, Daryl. Like you mentioned before, you know what they were, all the things that you were doing. And when we're obese, we know why we're obese. We know. We know by our behavior, we know the types of food. And once we reverse that, everything works out. So what do you think about that saying, eat what makes you feel your greatest?
Absolutely, yeah. Like Jen, I've listened to those podcasts, I've listened to her books and that, and her delay, don't deny. Well, there's certain foods I just know I can't eat. Like, you know, that's great for people that can do that, you know, but I just know eating potatoes or bread or whatever, it's a slippery slope and I'm not prepared to, you know, I'm not going to lose everything I've worked so hard at, you know, going forward. It's I'll eat, like you say, what makes me feel my greatest.
Yeah. And the thing is, Daryl, we know what they taste like, right? I mean, I haven't been in a fast food store for nearly 5 years, either in the store or in the drive through, because I was a fast food addict and I had to give that up because I knew what it was doing to me. It was killing me. And I haven't been in one for nearly 5 years and I don't want to go in one. And it's really funny because now when I drive down the street, they're almost invisible. I mean, they're everywhere, right? They're on every street corner. But when I was obese, they were like magnets to me. My car would almost take that turn into the drive-through every morning, every lunchtime, every afternoon. But now I don't even see them because, and it's the same with sugar. I was a sugar addict. So then now when I go into a bakery to get something for my wife or whatever it may be, and I look at all the cakes and everything in the stand, I just see a big pile of sugar. I don't see the food anymore. And now I just look at lovely food. And for me, it's like you said, you know, when you're having your window now, you've slowed down, you don't open up, you're not ravenous. And I say to anybody that is ravenous, when you open your window and you're sort of eating, overeating, try and slow down a bit by eating something like a bit of avocado or something higher in fat when you open your window, maybe some cream in your coffee when you open your eating window, that is. And you sort of just take that edge off, if you know what I mean, Daryl, and you can just sort of slow down a bit and pause. And I like to sort of have a little bit of a snack, and then I'll pause and I'll reflect, and then I'll maybe have a main. And then if I feel like it, I'll have a dessert, which for me is some fresh local berries in season, and maybe a bit of Greek yogurt, and then I'll close. That's sort of how my style is. Is your style sort of similar to that with your OMAD?
Yeah, it's more or less OMAD now. And yeah, like I'll have, like I said, I'd open with my oatmeal and protein and that. And then within probably half an hour to 45 minutes, I'll have my main meal. I don't do dessert because sugar is an issue for me. Even putting the berries in my oatmeal is dangerous for me because I just love that sugar, you know, and granted it's just frozen blueberries and raspberries, but you know, it still gives you enough of that little bit of an insulin spike that it's, you know, I could eat the entire bag of it if I let myself slip. Like there is that, right? Like, so I know, and then I've had my meal and I shut it down. I'm good until the next day.
Yeah. And that's the trigger foods coming out that you're talking about there. And particularly if you've had issues with sugar in the past. I mean, when I was obese, I used to eat a lot of fruit, right? Bananas, especially. I used to eat a lot of bananas. Sometimes I'd eat 4 or 5 bananas a day when they're in season and they were readily available and they were cheap. And so I always thought bananas are really good for you, right? And then I didn't realize how much that they were driving my sugar cravings. And then they were heading me into the lollies and the biscuits and everything else. And they were just, it was the segue into that. And then I remember when I was losing a lot of the weight, I wasn't really eating a lot of fruit. And I don't say to anybody not eat fruit. Obviously, fruit's probably pretty good for us. But for me personally, as a sugar addict, I get what you were saying. But now I've got to the point where I've moved from that addiction phase. And I was lucky enough before I came to intermittent fasting that I dealt with my sugar addiction. And then I moved into intermittent fasting because I wanted to find something that was sustainable enough to get the weight off. So my theory is, Daryl, that if for somebody that has a really chronic sugar addiction or fast food addiction, is to deal with those issues first and then come into fasting. Otherwise, you're sort of dealing with the two things at the same time and they dog you a bit. And I don't know if you sort of agree with that, but yeah, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you got to figure out what the cause of that is, like your addiction, right? What's causing that? And if you can't come to terms with that, and you know, because it is an addiction, you know, addiction's a terrible thing, and the way it spirals your mind into that, it's you'd be beating your head against the brick wall if you tried to do the fasting or any kind of a lifestyle change if you haven't dealt with that addiction, right?
Yeah. I felt like it was going to confession, right? When I finally came out and I admitted to people and I admitted to myself that I had an addiction to sugar, I had an addiction to fast food, because a lot of it I hid from people. A lot of people never knew, including my family, including my wife, they never knew how much food I was eating because I hid it from them. I would carry cash on me all the time, you know, and now nobody carries cash hardly, right? We all carry these plastic cards, we tap and go and all that sort of stuff. But I would always have cash because I could hide it and no one would see it in the bank statements, me going in the drive-through 3 times a day. I was a closet eater. I used to have food stuffed in my car everywhere. I'd have bags of chips under the seat in case I starved on the way to work, all this sort of stuff. You know, I'd sit in my car and I'd be crying while I'd been eating them, and because I was such in the depths of depression and low self-esteem because of what I was doing to myself. I'd drive into the drive-thru and all the time I'd be going, no, 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 no. And yet my car would be going, yes, 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 yes. Next thing I'd be at the board ordering. Then I'd drive around and I'd get it and I'd sit there and I'd look at it and I'd really hate myself for it. And I kept doing it. I kept feeding the addiction. And then when I stopped the addiction, cold turkey, and for me, that's the only way it worked. I had to stop cold turkey. Just stop doing it. Stop going to the drive-through. That was the easy part. Well, it wasn't easy, but I just stopped myself from going there and it worked out. And then with the sugar, it's still a work in progress. Will I never have sugar again in my life? Well, yeah, I will, because there's so many things that have sugar in it of any form, fake sugars, you name it. And that's the tricky part as a sugar addict. You know, if my daughter's getting married next week and she comes over and says, hey, Dad, will you share a bit of my wedding cake? Well, of course I'm going to do that. But, you know, I'm just not going to eat the whole cake. And that's the difference between now and then. Moderation versus previous addiction.
Yeah, you've got it under control now. You understand that aspect, and that's fantastic that you know your daughter's wedding like that. That's a huge life event, and absolutely you should be able to have a piece and to know in advance that you've got that under control. Like, that's got to make you feel fairly good about yourself, knowing that you've been the obese guy and now here you are, you know, this great, you know, celebration. Your daughter's getting married, and yeah, I can. I've changed myself, and I can have a piece of cake, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, just to clarify that, my daughter's not getting married. I was just using that as an example if that did happen. But okay. Yeah, she hasn't told me that yet, if she is. But yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, it's like going to a restaurant, and I looked at menus, and I always talk about window-worthy food. I mean, I've been to so many restaurants, particularly when I was losing the weight, and I look at the menu, and I'd say to my wife, I'm really sorry, but I can't eat any of this food because it's not worthy for me to have in my window, you know? Or we always, and then she'd say, okay, well, how about we look this stuff up online or stuff before we go there so you can find something to eat that you're happy with? Because for me, if I'm going to fast all day, Daryl, I'm going to make sure that window is going to be as worthy as possible. And I want to complement that clean fast. So if I'm clean fasting all day, and then I want to have a really worthy window. And what's worthy to one person may not be worthy to another. But to me, it's got to be able to make my body feel good. I don't want to go to bed at night feeling like crap. I don't want to roll around not sleeping. I want to just enjoy my food and stopping and switching off when I get that appetite correction. And speaking on that, appetite correction, when did that come for you, Daryl, when you got to that point? I mean, obviously, you were a huge guy that was used to eating massive amount of food. When did you get to that point of getting to that appetite correction?
Oh, I could eat a huge volume of food. Absolutely. It was disgusting. Like, I wouldn't get full. And just an incredible amount of food I used to be able to eat. And now, you know, that one plate or, you know, it's... what's the word, satiated or something? I'm satisfied with that one plate, like, you know, with my broccoli, with my chicken or with my venison or, you know, my salad. That's good enough. Like, that's what I need, and I'm full, and it's time to shut the window.
Yeah, and I think it's an important message too when we get to that point. It's almost deafening, isn't it? That sort of, you know, comes and you sort of feel that moment where you just go, yep, okay, I'm done. And I think a lot of people come unstuck where they might have a 1, 2, 4, 6, 8 hour window, and they get to that point of feeling full and satisfied, but they keep going because they think they've got time left in their window. And that's not the way to do this. The way to do it is to eat through that window period. But once you get to that sort of satiated feeling, you're satisfied, and you feel fully, comfortably full, not stuffed, not feeling like you've got to go and lay on the couch and undo your pants, stop, shut your window, and then move into the next day. And I think when we're obese, we just have no off button, Daryl. And it's just you eat through that feeling of being full because you're so used to being full all the time. Basically, yeah. I had that stuffed feeling when I was obese from the time I woke up in the morning to the time I went to bed at night. And then during my sleep, I'd still have it, because I was just so full of food, sugar, fast food, chemicals, you name it.
Oh, you're bloated, right? Like I was anyways. Like, you know, you're just, you're full of everything. And like you say, chemicals, you know, all that crap that we've been eating from the potato chips. Or like, there's nothing other than the potato, that nothing on that potato chip is real, you know, like the flavoring or, you know, whatever, if you had dip with it, like, oh my God, it's just... Eat real food. Don't eat packaged shit. There's stuff. Like, if it's got an ingredients label, it's not good for you.
Yeah, well, it's got some stuff hidden in it for sure if it's being processed. And that's the thing. We always talk about shopping the perimeter of the supermarkets or the big box stores over there in North America. And just I walk in, and the first place I'll go is the fruit and veg section. Then I'll go to the dairy section. I'll go to the deli counter. I'll go around to the seafood section, you know, pick up some chicken, whatever it may be. But I try to keep out of the aisles as much as possible because that's where all the highly processed foods did. And when I was trying to beat my sugar addiction, I found just by doing that, shopping around the perimeter of the supermarket, it made such a difference not going down those aisles and picking up all those foods that contain sugar. And then I remember going on a diet, it was going to be, you know, I'm only going to eat 99% sugar-free food. So I'd go down the supermarket and look at these aisles. Oh, hey, it's 99% sugar-free. Great, I can eat that. I can, you know, I'd go home and I'd eat it all. And I wonder why I'm not losing any weight. And then when I sort of went into my sugar addiction detox, if you like, I started learning about what sugar was in food. And I watched a great documentary called That Sugar Film. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's by an Australian. You seen that?
Yeah. Well, I've heard it. You've talked about it. I've looked for it on YouTube. I can't find it. I don't know if it's...
It's on Netflix and a few of those other ones. And that sugar film is pretty widely available. You'll find it. If I find the link, I'll send it to you. But he was a fit, healthy guy that sort of decided he was going to see what effect sugar had on his body over a period of 6 or 8 months or whatever it was from memory. And he just went downhill health-wise big time because he was eating all this food that was laden in sugar, fast food and sugary food. He was drinking Coke, but what he was doing, he was also eating the actual content of the sugar by teaspoons. So if something had 10 teaspoons of sugar in it, he'd eat the 10 teaspoons and then he'd physically be able to see what it was like to eat that. And when you see that visual, I mean, imagine going into a shop and picking up a drink bottle and it said this Mountain Dew has 25 teaspoons of sugar in it. Well, you're going to think twice about buying it, right? But it doesn't. It'll just say so much per grams or whatever, and it breaks it down like that to make it sound better. But when you have the education that you know what's in food, the whole world changes. So if anybody out there is struggling, I will say to them, learn about nutrition, learn about how much sugar is in food. And I think we have a lot of work to do in that area, Daryl.
Absolutely. And that's one thing about this journey that I'm on. It's like, I'd like to take a course, like a university course on nutrition, just to learn more about, you know, feeding the body and, you know, the human body and what we actually need for nutritional requirements and that. Like, it's opened up a whole new world for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. Opening up a whole new world indeed. But, Daryl, we're nearly out of time in the podcast today, but I can't tell you how inspiring you've been. And I've loved talking to you because I really resonate with your journey, being a fellow, you know, guy that's been pretty much the same sort of height and not as heavy as you got to, but certainly had sort of similarities in our journey. So if you're sitting down with some friends there in Manitoba, minus 20, and you're all huddled in with your big jackets on and a warm day, and they're talking about, you know, intermittent fasting, and your mates are saying, hey, Daryl, how do we get started, mate? What's some words of advice you can give us?
Well, I'd tell them to research first, you know, get into the podcasts, get into the books, you know, ask. I'd be more than willing to share the little bit that I know, but, you know, they've got to have their mind right and ready for that change. It's no different than beating any other addiction, because that's what it is. But it's the greatest thing you'll ever do for yourself if you'll stick with it, because it changes everything.
It does, and I really agree with that. The first question is, are you ready for this? Do you want to do it? What is your why for doing it? What do you want to do once you get the weight off? Sit down with me and let's draw up a list. What are the things you want to do once you get this weight off? What is this weight stopping you from doing right now? What can't you do? What's driven to you coming to me and asking me about this? And these are some of the things I'll ask people, you know. Let's talk about stress in your life. How much stress have you got? Are you overeating because of stress? And how are you going to deal with that? Because stress doesn't go away if you don't make it go away. And stress can be very debilitating when you're trying to lose weight, because it spikes your cortisol and it's fighting against you all the time. So like I said before, if you've got addictions, you've got high stress in your life, all those sort of things, relationship issues, whatever it may be, then sometimes it's better to deal with those first and then come into fasting when you're ready and you're ready to hit the ground running and you're ready to learn and get into it, and then commit minimum 6 to 12 months. like I say to people, are you prepared to commit 6 to 12 months minimum? Because I don't want you coming back to me and saying, hey, I've been doing this for 2 weeks and nothing's happened. You need to commit to this to 6 to 12 months, yeah?
Absolutely. You didn't gain all that weight in a week or two, right? It's going to take a long time to lose 100 pounds or, you know, whatever you have to lose. You know, smaller people don't have the same poundage to lose as you or I did, but you know, you've got to be in it for the long haul. It's not a quick fix. It's a lifestyle, right?
Well, our bodies aren't Amazon. They're not going to show up in 2 days, mate. And it took me 55 years to get as obese as I was. And that's the thing I always say to people. Well, they say, how long is this going to take? And I'll say, well, look, it took me 55 years to get as obese as I was. It took me 15, 16 months to reverse it by doing a daily fast, a clean fast, having a worthy window. And that's how long it took me. But we're all different. We're all different individuals. We all have different amount of weights to lose. We all have different hormones running through our body. There's so many variables. But if you give it 6 to 12 months and the average weight loss is, say, half a pound to a pound a week, well, that's 25 to 50 pounds over that year. And, you know, if that's not happening for you, then there's things that you can examine. You can then start examining, okay, I'm clean fasting. What's the next one? What's happening in my window? What's the triggers that's slowing me down? Why aren't I getting the results? Okay, it's those 4 cans of Coke that I'm drinking, 10 teaspoons of sugar in them. That's one thing. Then it's things like alcohol. That could be slowing you down. That could be a big trigger for spiking your weight. It could be bread. It could be pasta. So many different things. And you might find you might have to delay a couple of things just as an experiment to see if they are triggers. And that's why I like to weigh every day, Daryl, because I see that correlation on the scale. Like, as I was mentioning, I went out with my mates. I had a few drinks. I ate out of a different time window than I normally eat. I even had breakfast with them. I never had breakfast. And I just decided, okay, today I'm going to have a breakfast window, and then I'm going to fast for the rest of the day. But then I felt terrible for the rest of the day because I was out of my comfort zone. But we know that we can just go straight back to our protocol, like you mentioned before. So, but anyway, Daryl, I can't tell you again how much I really appreciated you coming on to the podcast, but thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway.
Thanks a lot, Graham.
All right, take care, mate.
Have a good one. Merry Christmas to everyone, and stay warm.
Yeah, you too, mate. And again, best wishes to your mum, and I hope a leg mends quickly. Okay, mate. Bye.
Thanks, Tom. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Daryl. I can't tell you how much your story resonated with me, and I was sitting here shaking my head, and we went a bit longer than usual this week. I was enjoying it so much, but thank you so much for sharing your inspirational story. 185 pounds, life-changing moment in your life, 88 kilos. That's unbelievable. So well done to you. I look forward to catching up with you, Daryl, in about 6 or 12 months' time and just seeing how life's treating you then and how your fasting journey's going. Okay, and also, folks, as you listen to in the podcast here, you can come and join us in the Fasting Highway Facebook group. Or if you're looking for a story or something that's relatable to try and get going, now you can find that in my book, The Fasting Highway. And as talked about, you'll find that on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle at the moment. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.